Seb, why are you wearing a jacket inside, by the way?
Because the heating is right down, because who are we with? Like, I think SSE, the prices are outrageous.
It's a proper Eskimo Parker jacket as well.
I've got this hood as well. It's one of those hoods that looks completely ridiculous if you wear it when it's up. I mean, who the fuck's actually going to wear that?
You look like you're about to steal an Iron Brew and a packet of McCoy's or something. Jeez. You got to sit like that for the whole podcast. No, please don't, actually, because we'll laugh way too much.
Welcome to the Mountain Running Pod with Seb and Cinco. I'm Seb Batchelor, and you'll be very pleased to hear that I'm back, joined alongside my good friend Rob Sinclair. So we've got some of Rob's banter back again. So Robbo, we haven't caught up in a little bit of time. How's it going?
Yeah, man. I'm good, mate. I'm good. Just back today. This morning went and did quite a hard hill rep session in the wet, which was interesting, but I don't know, there's something about running in the rain. I kind of like it. Once you're warmed up and stuff, you can actually get some decent output flowing. Feeling fine, man. Feeling fine. It's good to kind of be on the pod live together and getting some good chat going again, isn't it? How's form with you, man? What's been happening?
Busy. University started again. So
how's study? Is it all right?
Busy. It's awful. Trying to maintain sanity but through my training, which... it's been all right, but like midweek, you know how it is. It's like having a job, isn't it? You have to stay really local and do things which, like, you know, you can capitalize on, you know, not taking too long and all that kind of thing. But I think that's, I think it's time to introduce our guest for today. So we have the pleasure of welcoming onto the pod sky running sensation Georgia Tinley. A little background for the listeners, Rob, if you please.
She grew up in London, but has spent her life being sucked further and further north, where she now resides in Canusie near Aviemore's Mecca mountain range, known as the Cairngorms to all of us, which has now become her local stomping ground. She's driven by adventure, and her main focus is running, and she does a bloody good job of it in the mountains. I first heard of Georgia when she double-tagged Glencoe's VK and Ring of Steel Sky Race, which I was super pumped to have a local friend doing so well. She has since went from strength to strength, sampling a whole range of races across the skyrunning scene with consistently high results, along with their GB caps for the Mountain Long Trail Champs also. When I heard she joined the V-Dubs Volkswagen van crew, I knew we had to get her on the show ASAP. She's been doing some camper vanning this summer around Scotland and the Western Isles, basically warming up for the 2021 season, so watch out for Georgia Tinley, people. But outside of exploring, she's passionate about her books and reading, whether that be as a teacher full-time or relaxing at home, giving her feet and body a rest for once. Georgia, how's it going?
Yeah, it's good, thanks. It's a horrible day. It's pouring with rain and I'm putting off going out for a run. So... thanks for the procrastination.
It's taken till 3 PM and you're still putting off going for a run. I thought you were going to be going out this morning. What happened?
So I came through and I was like, I'll have a leisurely breakfast, I'll sit and chill out, and then I'll go for my run. And just as the kettle boiled, my housemates came out and they're like, Georgia, get in your cycling stuff, we're going for a ride. So I did that, and I've been trying to warm up ever since.
I can't think of a worse thing to be doing on a day like today than going on the bike.
Yeah, it was on the gravel bike, so
that
was good.
Something.
It was fun sloshing around in the mud.
Nah, we've both been out for runs this morning, I think, with differing reviews on how they went. I think I felt pretty good, but Seb was not feeling quite up to his usual pristine levels.
No, it's too much life stress, isn't it, like we discussed before, Robbo? It's not good for you. But anyway, let's push on with talking a little bit more about you and getting some history and background on on Georgia Tinley, and we did a little bit of digging around. I say the digging probably went as deep as going on the Power of 10. we saw that you, was it quite a long time ago, you started out in English Schools XC, which is I did that back a long time ago as well. It's probably still the most aggressive running race I've ever been in. But yeah, XC, and then you went to Edinburgh University, is that right? And carried on your XC and picked up a few park runs.
Yeah, so it all started really at Edinburgh. Joining the running club, trying to make friends, and didn't really look back.
And so was it in 2016 that you kind of started to make the transition to the mountains when you went to, you doubled up on the Ring of Steel and Memoirs VK, or did it happen sort of before then?
It was a bit before then, but I started off doing the shorter stuff, like the home internationals and things like that. Running for Scotland a couple of times. And then I just thought, why not go longer?
Mm. So, yeah, interesting. One thing that I'm quite interested in as, you know, you're from London, that's right, yeah? From down London.
Yeah.
So how did someone from London kind of fall in love with the mountains, mountain sport, and end up being kind of one of the world's best sky runners? Because I went on, we're on your website, and on your About Me page, it says you spent much of your childhood longing for escape, which is actually pretty deep. Like, explain further.
Yeah. It's hard, isn't it? So I grew up in London and no one really in my family is outdoorsy at all. Like, my parents just want to spend time like eating and drinking in the house and not really doing much. And I would always be like the annoying little kid that was like, let's go outside, let's go do something. And I remember we used to go like visit friends in the countryside, and I'd like beg them, like on the way home in the car, I'd be begging them to move out of London. And it never happened. So when I left home, I went to Edinburgh, and then I've just been getting further and further north ever since and getting out, enjoying the mountains.
So where did that come from? Because if your parents were sort of fairly indoor sedate, I'd probably like to say typical Londoners, like where did the passion come from? Because I know, you know, with Rob, his granddad was sort of a Munro man, and his dad, and my dad was the same, and that kind of, you know, you kind of come from a family of doing outdoor crazy activities, but you haven't at all. So where's that passion actually arisen from?
I couldn't really say, other than, you know, as kids, we'd come up to Scotland a fair bit. We've got family up here, so every summer we'd come up for a few weeks, and we'd do stuff. But it would just be like going for a nice little walk along the beach or something. I think I just always had this longing to, I remember you could always see the hills, and I was always like, I want to be up there. Like, how long, I remember we used to drive up through Glencoe and stuff, and I'd be like, Mum, how long do you think it would take me to run up that hill? And she'd be like, I don't know, that's a stupid question. And I was always begging to go up hills, and we climbed up, we went for a walk up the highest hill on Lewis near our house when I was like six, I think, purely because I'd been moaning about it for so long that we hadn't been up there. So I don't know where it came from, but it was always there. And it was always annoying everyone else.
So how much family have you got over in the Isle of Lewis, Georgia?
So no one lives there. My grandparents went there on their honeymoon back in the 50s.
Okay.
And just fell in love with it. And then bought a house.
Cool.
And we've been going up ever since.
Yeah, it's a nice island, isn't it? It's filled with really nice people, because Joanne's family, there's a lot of them still actually stay there. You know, we've not been there for about maybe 5 years, but I remember doing my first marathon on the road there, actually the Callanish Stones marathon. Seb, I was actually second, mate. Yes.
that's just first loser, Rob. That's shit.
I was only second because the guy who was third, well, he was second, I was third, and he dropped out with like 2 miles to go because he was super injured.
What time did you put down?
1 second sub three, below sub three, yes.
Sub three, come on. How long ago was that?
Oh, that was it's the only road marathon I've ever done. That, yeah, I'd like to say it was either 5 or 6 years ago. It was
okay.
Yeah,
I like
the roads there are pretty brutal as well. The headwinds.
Yeah, no specific training, Seb. Just rocked up and did it, mate. Badass. That's how we roll.
That's natural talent for you, Robster.
Yeah.
But let's move on from road marathons.
And get
into the sky racing, Rob.
Yeah. So obviously, I met you, Georgia, back when we were at the Salomon Camp in Annecy.
Long time ago.
I know, but since then, sky racing has been a massive part of your calendar, hasn't it? I mean, talk us through how you first heard of sky racing and what kind of drove you to enter in your first race, because it's quite a big step racing in Europe, you know. Just give us a bit of a background into that. It would be really interesting.
I think I first heard of it just friends mentioning it and things like that, and I was like, oh, that sounds really cool, that sounds really fun. And then I don't know, just following people on social media, things like that. And I was like, oh, this looks so much more fun than running around football pitches in Manchester. But it seemed like a really unachievable thing for a long time. So I think I was thinking about it for a while and then entered the Skyline Scotland Ring of Steel in the UK and did all right in those.
Mm-hmm.
And I went to that camp in Annecy with you and then was like, yeah. Like, I think I can do this, actually.
Yeah.
I started entering them.
So
it still took me a while. I think I did one the first year I did it, and then gradually did a few more each year.
Yeah. How did you find that transition from, I mean, the VK down in Glencoe and the Ring of Steel and the Skyline and stuff? It's totally different running to when you would go over and do anything in Europe, isn't it? You know, how did you find that transition between, it's quite a steep learning curve, isn't it?
So the first one that I did was Tromso, which is probably similar to Scotland as you're going to get.
Yeah, that was on my radar to do this year, actually, but with everything, you know, you've done both of them there, though, haven't you? You've done the extreme one and the hamper docking or something hamper, like that, isn't it?
Rocking?
Yeah.
Yeah. No, I've done the long one. I've done the extreme one twice.
Ah, is it? Cool.
Yeah.
Cool.
Yeah. So I did that 2 years ago and I did it last year as well.
And you've something I saw, and I never realized this, but you've actually been pretty much in the top 5 or the top 10 on almost all of your sky races, which is an amazing achievement, really, you know. You must be pretty pumped with that. I would be over the moon to come in the top 20. You know, you've been consistently up there, which just proves that you are running with the best of the best. You know, it's really good to see.
Yeah, and I was really chuffed last year because I started off about 9th or 8th in most of the races, and by the end of the season, I'd worked my way up to like 5th and 6th.
Yeah.
So
with your training for that, when you were was there certain things you changed to get to that level where you knew you could push to different elements? Did you change a lot of things and just take each race as it came, or did you have an overall plan to sort of gradually build up over a couple of years and just gain experience with race after race? Or how did you sort of form your strategy into that, into really working at the top end with the best?
It was definitely about building up experience over years, I think. Because when you go out to these races and you're by yourself and you don't know anyone, a lot of it's quite intimidating. It'd be really easy to lose the mental side of it. I remember the first one last summer, I went out and I was just like slightly overwhelmed by the whole experience and ended up having a rubbish race. And by the end of the season, like, I knew people, I knew what was going on, the pressure didn't get to you so much, and you could actually just relax, and that's when the good races happen. So So it's definitely about building up the experience, and obviously the training builds and everything else builds as well. But I think the most important thing is building up experience and getting the confidence to know that you can do all right.
I agree, because I remember with all the cycling, I think you, over time, you become comfortable in unfamiliar surroundings. You know, when you, it's like doing anything new, or you go to somewhere and you don't speak the language to begin with, or you go to like registration or signing and there, everyone's speaking a weird language, it can be a little bit intimidating, as you say. And then after you've done it for a few years, it's just the norm, you just roll with it and you're happy and relaxed. And you say you get to know a few people and you have the crack, and that can be the difference between kind of being tight on the start line and overly nervous and just kind of relaxed and letting the body do what it can do, for sure. And we've had both Zach and Jacob on the pod before you, and they've kind of come in at slightly different angles on training specifically for mountain races. So to get your take, like, how do you specifically prepare for the European races when living in the UK, where the terrain is a little bit different?
I just try and match the terrain that I'm covering as closely as I can with the races that I'm going to. So, you know, if I'm not training for anything specifically over the winter, I can just go out and I can run whatever I feel like and choose routes that take my fancy, and that's fine. But living in the Cairngorms, if I'm going out to doing a European race where it's all going to be on paths and it's all going to be quite fast, I've got to plan my training routes around that. I've got to think, like, you know, where can I go where it's actually going to be a good path and I can run the whole climb instead of trying to jump over heather and wade through bogs and whatever else stops you.
Yeah, because I think it kind of sort of brought home to me when I spoke to Zach about leg speed, because if you train too much up around here, and, you know, as you say, you're going through the bogs and across the heather, you get really bloody strong in, but you get quite slow. Like, I remember having a joke with my brother earlier in the year on basically kind of being able to run at a max speed of like 13 kilometers an hour, whether that was uphill through heather, downhill through heather, like on the flat on the road, just because you get that like one speed. And yeah, and then you get over to Europe, and as you say, they actually use a brain when they're making paths up mountains and zigzag rather than just going straight.
So, and actually bother to make the paths.
Yeah, well. Yeah, true. So yeah, it's really important to, as you say, yeah, I agree, to look at what's going to be coming up in the race and yeah, the terrain and kind of focus your training a little bit on that to however much you can.
And I think that's why I tend to do better on the longer ones as well, because I can't, like, I've definitely lost speed over the last few years, but I can also, the speed I can get to, I can run at that speed for quite a long time.
Yeah, you can sustain that for a longer duration, eh?
But you should be able to draw on, you know, given you've done so much cross country, so many years of cross country in the past, that should surely stand you in good stead for having that speed to draw on if required. Do you think it makes you a more rounded runner?
I think so, yeah. And I think, because I've done the shorter races, I'm always kind of counting down in the back of my head, like, once I get within the last 10, 5K of a race, I know that I can, how hard I can push for that last little bit and how much it can hurt, and I can go there because I've done it so many times in short races. I think that helps as well.
It's interesting that you're talking about, some people approach this with likes of Zach and Jacob, they've contrasted with several elements of their training, but they've talk a lot about leg speed and having that engine and things, whereas you're talking a lot about training specifically for the terrain and matching that, which I find is very, I think it's essential, because you've got totally different turnover on boulder fields and things than you do on a groomed path up Ben McDewey or something, you know. And I think it's good that you're looking at a race and breaking it down that way.
And it's not just leg speed as well. I think your whole running posture changes depending what terrain you're on. Like, your core has to do different things. Sometimes I'm scrambling, I've got to use my arms. It's not just It's just not just speed that I've got to work on.
No, it's a full functional alpine movement sort of thing, isn't
Yeah, well, that isn't that where the skiing isn't that where the skiing comes in? That's how you justify it,
it?
right?
Yeah, that's how I justify sacking off a run to go do some
Yeah, that's
skiing.
way more fun, isn't it?
So much better.
That's why Seb's been chalking up so much recently, isn't it?
What the prospect of going skiing?
No, just like, I'm not going running, I'm just gonna go climb a crag instead.
Yeah, well, when your body's as fucked up as mine, then like getting on the roller skis or like going climbing, you can actually go out. Whereas like now it's like you do like 1 3-hour run, and then the next day I get up in the morning, I'm like, nah, I'm done. Absolutely done. It's not worth it. So no, I'm just waiting for some snow, like fingers crossed, and then you can actually put
Yeah.
together some like big days back to back. But you've gotten, just kind of like segue off briefly and talk about things that are more interesting than running. You said you've got into some climbing. Please divulge more.
Yeah, well, I mean, I've been a total of, I think, 3 times now, so I'm not sure that counts as getting into climbing, but it's just like, seems like a good way to spend the day outside without totally knackering yourself, because there have been so many days this summer where the weather's been amazing and you want to go for like a 6-hour run, but you can't because you just can't physically do that every day. So I think I'm always looking for ways that I can spend time outside, but at a more sustainable level than running all the time.
Yeah, it's really good fun as well, isn't it? I think I've talked to Rob about this before, because like I think with running, I don't know if you're the same. I mean, a lot of people, maybe they say running's their like escape, which it is. You can turn your mind off, but sometimes for example, like me today, if you've got so much going on in your head, running's such a natural thing to do when you do it so much. So actually, you don't really need to think when you're doing it. So like, say if you've got a lot going on, you can't turn off, and running doesn't give that escape. But like something like climbing, because it's a skill sport and you have to be 100% in the moment in order to do it, I think it's such a good mental release, and having that is really important. And even if you could be like, because in the past, I think I said to you, like, I didn't climb for years and years when racing the bikes, just worried about getting injured or like not being focused enough. But actually, I think spending some days going, whether that's going climbing or, whether you want to go and play golf or something like, whatever it is, it's actually like so beneficial. I mean, would you agree?
It's just that I just had a vision of you hitting up, teeing up on the first hole, mate. I just can't. We need to make that happen.
Yeah, I've had that effect as well, like with the proper golf outfit.
Playing off four, mate. Playing off four.
Yes.
I'm not really.
Oh, yes.
But it's the same thing. Like I did that when I did that when I was racing, and I was having like a lull. And I came back to the UK. I played like a heap of golf for like 2 months, got completely addicted, because it turns your mind off. And then I ended up having like the best like end of season I've ever had. So yeah.
So we should all go play golf for a couple of
Yeah,
months and
exactly. But this is my point, is like if you're stagnating or something, then it's just like turn your brain off from something else, whether it's climbing or golf or whatever.
it's funny you should say that, because when you watch a lot of the triathletes, though, they supplement their training with golf just to walk around and stretch out and have a good laugh with their mates. It's maybe it's the missing ingredient to all of us, golf.
Yeah, this is where we're going wrong.
And if you want to play golf, you can go to Bryn Mawr, because it's got the Scotland's highest altitude golf course as well.
Oh, really? Get some hypoxic training
Yeah.
in whilst we're there as well.
Oh,
But
it's
let's get back onto the running. Let's move on from golf. In the
yeah, let's get off the
2020 race calendar, certainly Rob picked up on a few of your FKTs that you've been out and out and doing.
Yeah, so I've been out and I did the Lochaber Traverse. So that was good fun. That was such a hot day. and there's no water up there. Everyone keeps saying, like, oh, you know, there's water if you know how to find it, but I couldn't find it. I was a mess by the end of that run. Don't want to stagger over the bridge kind of scenarios.
So what was your actual time for that then? How have you compared to the other FKTs that have been taken on that route?
So it was a relatively new one. I think Finley only did, like, sort of made it official over lockdown.
Okay.
But I think I knocked like 10 minutes off the girl who'd done it before, something like that.
Sweet. Nice. So what is the actual Loch Abra Traverse then? Are you doing the Annex, the Greys, and then finishing over the Ben or something?
Is it? Yeah, so you got the Grey Quarries, Annex Bay, Gagmore, drop down along CMD, over the Ben and down.
Cool. Did you take the chicken runs on the CMD, or did you go right on the nose of the gnarly ridge?
I 100% took the chicken runs.
People say that's super technical, the CMD, and you've just got to laugh because it's just like a mini boulder field ridge, you know what I mean?
It was so funny. There were so many walkers up there that day, and they were going along like, oh my God, I don't know how we're going to get there. This is terrifying. And then like this short little girl skips past them and they're like, what?
The best thing of being in the mountains is that sort of thing. It's like when you're in the winter and like say there's snow on the ground and you run past people in like, I don't know, your shorts or your tights, whatever, with just like, you know, a small pack on. And there's people out in like full like winter alpine mountaineering gear. Yeah.
Yeah.
It's like all the time on the Cairngorms as well.
Yeah.
Do you ever get like abuse doing that though?
Yeah.
Because people.
Do you?
Yeah.
Do you as well?
Yeah. All the time.
Yeah. They seem insulted that you're disrespecting the environment because you're underprepared, and it's like, no, I'm perfectly comfortable with what I'm wearing, and I can get off the mountain quicker than you can if I encounter some dangerous situation, you know.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, definitely. And you also went and did Ring of Steel FKT as well, is that right?
Yeah, I didn't know that was an FKT route until after I'd done it.
Oh, nice.
So I stopped and had some sandwiches and stuff along the way.
Has that always been an FKT, or is that another Finlay made it FKT over lockdown sort of thing? Because I had no idea that was an FKT. Yeah. Okay.
I think Finlay's like really trying to get the FKT scene in Scotland going, and it's working, definitely.
Yeah.
There are a lot more people getting out and doing it, and you know, he's covering it in his podcast and on his website.
Yeah, it's good.
And
isn't
it's really good.
So how do you go about establishing an FKT? You could say like this wasn't an FKT. So what makes it an FKT? Just someone claiming it?
They're all really well-known routes that people go and do anyway. So I guess it's just, you know, someone's got to be the first person to say like, right, this is going to be an FKT. This is the time I've done. You can do better.
Oh, okay. So he's basically just throwing it out there.
Yeah.
Oh, okay. Interesting.
Did you race Ring of Steel in 2019, Georgia? Yeah, you did, didn't you?
No, that was the only year I've not done it. I did the Glencoe Skyline in 2019.
Ah, yeah, because you won it.
Yeah, poor knowledge, Rob.
I know. Apologies, Georgia.
Didn't do
apologies.
So much.
Yeah, for getting that big win. Well, you watched. It's good. It's impressive.
It's insane. It's so good.
But the next sort of main topic we kind of wanted to discuss, and it's something that you're relatively outspoken on, is a little bit more around like the sport of mountain and trail running as a whole, and like equal opportunities for women. Like, how do you feel how do you feel that the sport can grow and house the sort of the equal opportunities, or, you know, whether that's prize money or what, how does that tie in with that? Like, what would you like to see?
I think people do need to be outspoken about issues when they come across them. I think, you know, change doesn't happen unless people are willing to call other people out and to say, you know, this isn't okay or whatever. I think I first became aware of it when I was running a lot of cross country, because in Scotland, I think England as well, the women would always run like 6K and the men would be running 10K. Mm. And it used to just really annoy me because there's no reason for it. And, you know, you bring it up and people be like, oh, yeah, but that's just the way it is. That's the way it's always been. Blah, blah. You're like, but why? Why does it have to be that way? And then they'd come up with some bullshit reason like, oh, but if the woman ran 10K as well, the day would go on too long and people would get too cold and no one would do it anymore. And you're like, that's just doesn't make sense. So yeah, it's definitely about calling people out on that kind of things. Like the national cross country in Scotland is now equal distances for men and women.
Yeah, it's good,
isn't
it?
And there's one big year when like a few girls went along and they ran the men's route to prove a point. And that after that it changed. So I think the main thing that people can do is to call people out and say something when they see something they think is wrong.
When you see all the results coming in from the sky running races and seeing, I find it really good because everyone does the same thing. The results are up there, they're balanced, especially in the sky running circuit that you've been doing the last couple of years, Georgia. And I loved it back in, I think it was 2017 or maybe 2018, when you actually had called out Salomon on them putting up the male results instead of the female results, and there was a chart, it was some good comments up there. I thought it was absolutely bang on because they were just saying how all this was male result in, and you called it out, and it's how it should be. It's shocking when that is going on. I don't like to see it happening.
Yeah, and I think the important thing is that, you know, they actually, I'm not saying it was me, but they don't do that so much. I think women are getting more and more equal coverage across from Salomon, Golden Trail and Skyrunning,
yeah,
and all over the sport. And I think that is a result of everyone sort of stepping up and saying when they see something that they disagree with, when they see something that's wrong.
I guess that relates to the advertising side of it though, doesn't it? I mean, how do you feel the sport is advertised between males and females? Do you think there's equal representation in that side, or do you think it's dominant on one of the other from what you've seen?
I think it tends to, I think you see more men, you just see them more in the coverage, you see them more in the results, you see them more, even just like if you're on a race website and you're looking for pictures from past years, the pictures will be of men. There'll be a few women, but they'll mostly be of men.
It's so wrong. I don't understand why that is the case at all.
I think a lot of the time it's subconscious. People, you know, they're not putting a website together and thinking like, oh, let's show loads of men. They're putting a website together and they're going like, oh, that's a cool shot, that's a cool shot, that's a cool shot. And they just don't think about it. And that's why when you see something, you have to say it, because it's not even a malicious thing. I think most of the time it's just that they're not thinking.
Yeah, I guess you're right, because if it becomes subconscious because of the way culture has been like that, then by not saying something, you're actually contributing to the problem, aren't you? You need to be raising your voice and making a point about that, I think.
And I think it's also important that you can sort of change things at any level. So like when I was at university and I was captain of the cross country club, we had this race. It's like braids, and it's a 5K. Well, the girls did 5K and the men did 10K, and there was no reason for it. It was just the way that it had always been. And so a few of us were like, this is ridiculous. And then I think the year after I left, they changed it. And now everyone can either run the 5K or the 10K. It's not that the men do one and the women do the other one. And like, that's just a tiny race in Edinburgh that a bunch of students go do. But actually, I think it does make a difference if you're changing things at the lower level as well. Like, you're just setting a good example.
Yeah, no, definitely. Do you know Kerry Wallace down in Glencoe with her Girls on Hills sky running camp and stuff? No.
No, not met
you. You should get in touch with her, because she started a trail running school down in Kinlochleven with her husband. He's like a qualified mountain guide and climber, and she's basically super passionate about getting women out on the hills and giving a voice for everything. And I've got a few friends who've been down there and done some scrambling courses with her, and she's taken them up around the Anakiga Ridge and Curved Ridge and stuff, and done some recces of the Ring of Steel. And I think it's fantastic that they're promoting that, and she's been doing it for I think the last 2 years. I met them out in the Transalp, and it's just so good to see. You should definitely get in touch with her, you know, and help the promotion. I think me and Sab certainly will be.
Yeah, and you've relatively recently started running for Merrell, is that right?
Merrell, yeah.
How do you pronounce it?
Merrell?
Merrell. 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 My bad.
Like Merrell Street,
Seb. How did that come about? And like, it's cool to get support from a company that's not sort of as well known in the kind of mountain and trail running scene. So did you approach them? Did they come to you? And what's it like being involved with that company?
Yeah, so it was back in 2019 where I did quite a few Sky races and was doing all right at them. I think I was like the only one in the top 10 who wasn't sponsored by anyone.
Love it.
So my friends at Sky Running were like, we need to fix this. I think they just suggested my name to Merrell because they knew Merrell were putting together a team, and it's all just fallen together really nicely.
So good.
Yeah, it's perfect. And they're just starting, like, as you said, they're not actually massively well known Sky Running or trail running. They're just putting their first team together this year and developing the shoes, which is really good because we get to give feedback on the shoes and we get to influence the way that they're developing and say what we like and don't like. So it's a really interesting brand to be a part of.
That's so good, isn't it? That's so cool.
It's like what Jacob said with New Balance. I think being involved in product design, it's what the kind of a major aspect of what athletes should be involved in. You know, sure, it's around advertising promotion, but also it's understanding the equipment and you know, putting it through its paces, so to speak, and like refining it. I think that's really important. So having that relationship with a company that's receptive, that's pretty cool. Yeah, that's nice. Yeah.
I just think it's really good that more and more runners, well, the more athletes that get to do that kind of thing is good, because I think a lot of companies assume that everyone who runs fast wants the same kind of shoe, whereas in reality that's not the case at all. You know, some people want something super lightweight, some people are going to get injured if they run in that. So the more athletes that get the feedback on the different types of shoes we want, the better the products will be.
100%.
How much input have you got in the R&D stuff with the trainers? Are we going to get a Tindley signature shoe?
yeah, definitely. Limited edition.
What's it going to be called? The Tindley Uphill model. The VK model.
Tindley Trail Runner.
I'm going to be thinking of something, and I'm going to text you an absolutely banging name for a trainer, and you're going to have to use it.
Yeah, copyright Rob Sinclair.
20% of all sales go to the Sinclair Foundation.
the foundation of complete shit banter.
Yeah. Just terrible chat, Rob.
Terrible chat. So bad. But on chat...
You've got some quick fire questions, haven't you, Rob? Which you've put together.
Certainly do. Are you all good for this, Georgia? You ready? Do you want to take a drink?
I'm good.
Do you want to relax and?
Yeah. Let me just get in the zone.
I don't know. I don't know, Seb, if we should introduce, because you did a similar thing with Zaki Boy. Eh? I don't know if we should introduce a time limit on how fast these questions should be answered. What do you reckon?
Oof, up to you. What are you thinking? How mentally prepared are you feeling, Georgia?
I'm actually feeling quite nervous now. Quite
There's not many.
I feel my adrenaline pumping.
There's not many questions. It's okay. There's like four or five. I reckon think on your feet and we'll be like, Seb will hit the buzzer if you don't get the right time limit. Right. Let's hit up question one then. Are you ready?
I am ready.
Okay, who are your favourite people to train with, or do you like to fly solo?
Oh no, I definitely prefer training with people.
Cool.
My housemates, Cat and Richard.
Ace. What is the weirdest or strangest thing or surprise that's ever happened to you on a run?
I got attacked by a gigantic squirrel that launched out of a tree and landed on my head.
Oh, you've got to. We'll give more time limit in order to explain that one further.
Yeah, I want to hear this. Were you stealing its nuts or something?
once. No, it was after, when was it? After some race in Italy, and Robbie was there, and Sam was there, and Charlotte was there, and we'd been, oh, Ross was there. And we'd been some mega run, and we got lost. And I was really hungover. It was the end of the season. And I was kind of dropping off the back, and like, the boys had disappeared down the hill, and I was struggling. And we were running through this really, really thick forest, and like this huge thing just fell out of a tree and onto my head. And it was so bristly, it felt like, I don't know, like a dustpan brush would be like thrown at me. And it ran all the way down my arm and jumped onto my leg and down my leg and then ran off.
Jesus Christ. Was it a grey squirrel? Like one of those, like a big, like...
No. It was like four times the size of that. It was jet black. I ran up to the boys. I was like, you'll never guess what happened.
This is just to inform you that it was actually a cat that fell on your head. You were that wasted. It was a black cat. That sounds like a bloody cougar, like, falling down the tree.
It was terrifying.
It's funny, one of my mates here, Mike, he finished, I think it was Ultra Tour Wales or something. He was running the whole length north to south of Wales, and halfway through, he picked up a dead squirrel, right? I don't know why, on the side of the road, claimed to be hallucinating, and finished the race with the squirrel attached to his Ultimate Direction race pack. It's mental, is it? Like, squirrels just seem to have this thing. I don't know.
That's pretty weird. Yeah.
Was he just like hungry?
I don't know. I am not sure. He probably took the squirrel home, knowing him, and decapitated it and cooked it up in some burger or something. I don't know.
Oh. What's it called when? Isn't there a name for people that eat roadkill? I think it's a thing. I don't know if it's necessarily considered a medical problem or not, but yeah, I think that's a thing that people pick up roadkill. But
mate, as the qualified or nearly qualified vet of this chat, you should 100% know this. I'm disappointed.
Oh, Christ, yeah, but I'm gonna go out there and say I don't advocate eating roadkill.
Yeah.
Stay away from the squash squirrels and pheasants and stuff.
Right, let's go back to the questions. Okay, cross training, believer or not?
Believer.
Okay, cool. What is your guilty pleasure after a mega session?
Dairy milk, fruit and nut, the whole bar.
Whole bar.
The big family share size bar.
Awesome.
Yeah.
Seb looks disgusted.
I am disgusted. What, like one of those like proper like kilo bars?
I just cannot control myself.
Do you not feel sick after that?
No.
Oh, man, Seb, I think you'd be breaking so off lucky. The parts and weighing each segment and being like, yes, 4.5 grams of fat in this bite.
I'm not as bad as I used to be, but... Hey man, eating disorder's a male problem as well, dude.
Yeah, I know. It is actually. I kind of feel like I'd like to speak more about the cross training side of what you like doing as well. I know you like your skiing and you're getting into your climbing, but do you do any core and stability work and things like that?
Yeah, I do a fair bit of core and stability work.
Cool.
Once or twice a week, maybe.
Yeah.
I hate it, but I do it because I feel like I should do it.
Yeah.
But it's like a massive struggle to get out into the garage and do it every single time. Do not enjoy it.
Do you think it would be better if, you say you go to your garage, do you think it'd be better if you like went, obviously it's a bit more of a nightmare at the moment, but to go to a gym? Because I think like, because I have like a kind of semi-home gym setup, and I think the quality of session that I do when I go to the home gym is not as good as if I went to like a proper gym, because it focuses you more. I don't know, or do you just like hate on it full stop?
I mean, I just really hate it. But also if I go to a like a proper gym, I think I just feel really self-conscious. I'm like, I'm a runner, I don't really know what I'm doing. I guess I'll just like lift some stuff and hope that no one judges me. Whereas if I'm at home, I just get on with it and it's fine.
Oh, cool. Yeah. And skiing plans for the winter? to get a bit more lowdown on that?
Just every time there's snow, cool and sick.
are you full-time teacher, or do you teach part-time, or what's the crack when you're not running and skiing?
No, I'm doing supply at the moment, so I've been full-time for the last term, but I think I'm going to go down to 3 or 4 days a week over winter, just because there's not as much need for me.
Cool.
But even last year, like last winter, we were getting in skis before work and then going teaching and then going for another ski after work.
Make it happen. Man, that is so cool, is it?
And are you wanting to get more into the, like, because I'm putting like pieces together here. So it's like, you're getting into trad climbing, you're getting more and more into skiing. I mean, that's just pointing towards going into some like proper like ski mountaineering and hitting some like crazy like Cody Towns and Lions or something. Is that appealing or not so much?
Oh, it's definitely appealing. I just don't have the skills.
What about getting abroad if we can?
Oh, definitely. Yeah.
Yeah. I just kind of as well have this picture of you forming this all around alpine athlete thing going on. It's cool. You know, I think between the three of us, certainly there could be some interesting winter days to be had, because I've got all my Skimo kit and I've not actually used any of it yet. And I would love to get out for some cross country skiing and just go mental, especially around the Cairngorm area and down into Shelterstone, all the gullies there, you know, Castle Gates Gully and yeah, Pinnacle Gully and the slabs and stuff. It looks so good to do and get good on it.
Yeah, definitely. As soon as the snow comes.
Yeah, did you put in some days last year as well? Like what were you out doing last winter when there was enough snow?
When there wasn't enough snow? There wasn't actually that many days. Maybe like a week where there was enough snow. Oh, there's a really good weekend in November where we were sort of, me and a friend's skinned up Cairngorm and went down the other side towards Lochan and just kind of went up and down there for a while. But then later on the year, the snow was pretty rubbish, so we just stayed mainly on the piste where there was snow in piles that you could skip between.
Yeah, that's the problem with Scottish skiing, isn't it? It's like so inconsistent and then it's really slushy. I remember my dad telling me a story, which has probably like kind of put me off Scottish skiing a little bit, of when he was a boy, and I think he was skiing in Cairngorm, and he was like, yeah, it's just the snow's so like thick and slushy, it's like porridge, and like old school skis where, you know, the bindings didn't release and he just like stopped dead, no release, his leg just goes absolutely destroyed his leg. And yeah, it's kind of put me off a little bit because of just the thought of that. It's just
and the visibility in Scotland as well is so bad so often.
And also the wind, it's always whipping over there, isn't it? Like,
yeah, I got blown off my skis last winter for the first time.
My god. Yeah, that sounds dodgy.
It was just happily skinning up towards the ridge and then next thing I knew I was on my bum 2 meters down.
Ah, you gotta love it, it's good old Scottish weather. Yeah,
no, that sounds awesome. I think that's like what I asked the question in the beginning, like what you love about the mountains. And I think we're all quite similar and they just like being in that environment no matter what, you know, if it's on the skis, whether it's climbing or running or something like that. And now before we sort of sign off, like just sort of a final question that again maybe a little bit deeper is like, what drives you to be the best mountain runner you can be?
What drives me to be the best mountain runner? Yeah. I mean, the root of it all is just that enjoying being out and enjoying being in the mountains. And I think, you know, you enjoy that whole experience so much more when you're fitter. And then it's when you're fitter and you're faster that you get those moments of just like pure flow where you're moving and you're not thinking about anything and you're just enjoying that second of being there.
Goosebumps.
And you get that when you're racing as well. And you, yeah, that's where like the proper enjoyment comes from.
Love it. Love it. I've got a little bit of goosebumps. I think I'm going to drive out to Lough Neagar and do a hill rep. No, that's really good, eh? What drives you to be the best, Seb? Come on, tell us.
I think possibly not too dissimilar from that answer.
Yeah, I think we're about all about
first
the same, aren't
being
we?
Like super competitive. And I think the racing is like enjoying the fight, like the battle, like actually enjoying being around other people and like pushing yourself hard and pushing yourself up the, against the best. And I think that's why like I'm not that motivated to do like smaller races or less well-known races, because like I don't feel like I'm going to get anything out of that, whereas like you go and race against the top guys, you're going to really compare yourself. But like really I think as well, yeah, just loving being out. And then the, because I, you know, I don't race that much in a year, and I think the racing is just to satisfy that competitive edge and to have that release. But the rest of the time is actually just being out, like moving through the hills, spending time with the dogs, and yeah, and just enjoying the freedom that the mountains bring, and the kind of like, yeah, I don't, God, I don't want to get too deep and like Buddha-like, but like kind of like the Zen that you get when there's no one else about, and that feeling. I think there's something about the mountains that, you know, if you feel it, or you know, you've got that kind of feeling within the mountains that you can't get anywhere else, like that feeling. Yeah, so that, yeah, let's we might as well ask you then, Rob.
Yeah, go on, Rob.
I knew that was coming. I loved it though, Georgia, before I tell you my amazing reasons for being driven, but I loved it when you said the words pure flow. That was good. I like that. And Seb, you're dropping in the Zen chat. I like that as well. You know, I'm pretty much the same as you, but I feel like my side is a bit different right now, because I got so invested into the long stuff and the endurance side of things that now I'm driving a lot more to, it's a bit late in life to be doing this, but I'm driving a lot more to the performance side, where I actually want to see where my top end limits are. And by doing that, hopefully bring up the efficiency of my endurance side, and then kind of see where my optimum distance kind of lies in that respect. From doing a lot of big races, I definitely now want to get into the slightly shorter stuff and start competing, like Seb's saying, that feeling of competing with better people to really pull you on a lot, you know. And I think me and you spoke a bit about that, Georgia, last year when we were at Mille Buchel, and you were peed off because you couldn't go to Le Mone, and we were there and there was the Kaelin stuff, and it was a good laugh. And I was frustrated then as well, because I'd been away and raced a good run, but I felt rubbish. I had no top end against Brennan, and I was like, this is the sort of race that I should be pulling through and doing well over in Ireland, mm-hmm. and the Mourne skyline. And it's ever been since then that I've realized that I need to put more time into actually getting better at training, none of this unstructured pitch, and just actually getting, like you say, the fitter you are, the more you can enjoy it, but also being fitter and seeing it where you can push your boundaries. You know, that's kind of my side of it, but yeah, also all the other.
Yeah, but, you've really honed that in, Rob. Like your structure is really good now, and I know like you let me have a look at like some of your numbers and all that kind of thing, and you know, Rob's like biggest problem is like getting, he's like a little kid like in a candy shop, you know, like like when the weather is good, Rob's just like, I'm going out for 8 hours, and like he doesn't like think of like the long game, but like he's,
yeah, I do that as
yeah
well.
I was, that's what I was gonna ask. I'm,
it's
like
so hard,
those
not
people
to.
That like just loves it so much, you just can't contain yourself.
Last Saturday, I destroyed myself doing that.
How
you're not eating
go?
Like burgers on the trail and stuff, or are you? You met something.
I am. got the new gravel bike, was meant to be going out with my housemates. Then they had a mechanical, so I went on by myself. And so rode around to Ben Alder, did a run at Ben Alder, then was meant to be riding back round to Karur to meet a friend for dinner, and it's her birthday. And I just bonked. Like, I'd been out for like 8 hours, missed her birthday, ended up lying on the side of the trail 2K from the restaurant, just like, I can't go on.
So where did you go from? Did you go from Dalwhinnie or did you start at your house?
No, so we started at the Fort Williams end of Loch Laggan.
Oh, right, okay, from that side.
The climbers
right,
car
right.
park. I went back round to Ben Alder, did the run, went back round to the car park, picked up a change of clothes, and then went over to Carew. Because it was a nice day.
Good God.
And then went from Carew back to the van afterwards.
I remember when we were up Ben Alder and you've just nailed it from the complete other direction, Georgia. That's a massive day.
Yeah, but it didn't go well.
Well, we were more sensible when we were up that way because we started from the Loch Rannoch side and we ran in and we went over... Can you remember the name of the Mum Road on its east side, Rob?
No,
we went over the Munro. There's like a Munro, just like there's a saddle if you're coming from. It looks like
yeah.
a saddle if you're coming
it's
from
a wee horseshoe,
the
isn't
south.
It?
Yeah, and we went over it, and then we dropped down. We went up like a nice ridge, didn't we? And we were going to do those other Munros, and then we full on bottled. Because actually, now thinking about it, it's kind of rubbish.
It's
like
so
when you say
lame. Looking
like
back, it's
day.
So bad.
And then we bottled it. We bottomed doing it, and then we were descending the path to start heading back. And Rob was like, I just want to get in a bit more vert. I just want to get in, like, what was it, 2,000, 2,500? He's like, let's just go up that one. I'm like, what the fuck?
And then, yeah, but then
the best thing
then
was,
Seth,
the best
Seth,
thing
was,
like, then I hammered
flying.
You on, I hammered you yeah. on it, you bastard.
Yeah. You were like, come on, mate, where have you gone? And I was like, mate, you were like
That's because I thought, I was like, if you're going to say let's go up there, then I'm going to absolutely like, yeah.
There's no better feeling than being out on a run and the other person falling apart.
Yeah, well, I mean, that it's partly because last year, when one of the times Rob and I were out together, where was it near Lockern, Rob?
Why did we go up? I can't, bugger, I can't remember the name.
But for once I let Rob plan the route, which, by the way, never let Rob plan the route.
I've heard this from multiple
absolute shit. And Rob's like, yeah,
knows.
We'll go this way, and then it's just like we're following the trace on the watch and it's just saying straight on and there's nothing, it's just like dense pine forest. I'm like, where have you plotted this from, Rob? And then, so then we end up like hacking over the moor, didn't we, for ages?
Yeah. And you were raging. You were like, this
I was,
is not running. This
yeah, it was just because it was shit weather as well.
Yeah.
And I was absolutely bushed because I had like a big placement week.
Was it
I?
Not
I
up Stuka Cron? That's
that
what
was
it was, wasn't it? Yeah.
That was it.
Yeah. But it is like that on the way up, from but not from the side we were going from. It was pretty brutal.
I was going to say, there's a good path all the way up that, isn't there?
Yeah, there's supposed to be.
We went a weird way. We went the Rob Sinclair way up it, which is... And then I ate all Rob's food because I was absolutely hanging. And then had the worst coffee known to mankind at Lockern Head, didn't we?
Yeah. So this has been a really good podcast. I've enjoyed it. It's good.
Yeah, thanks for having me on.
No, thank you for giving up your time. We really, really appreciate it. Okay.
Bye now.
Right, bye. Bye.
Bye.
Well, folks, that was Georgia Tinley. What a girl, eh, Seb?
Yeah, it was great. It was great to have her on and, you know, just really have a good crack, but also get to know what makes her tick. And I think a lot of us... kind of get the same things from the mountains, don't we? We just love being out there no matter what it is, and it's great to see the enthusiasm and yeah, she's got a good sense of humor and clearly going to be going full guns blazing in that VW camper across Europe on the sky running scene next year.
Definitely. Well, we know she delayed it for this year, and I truly just can't wait to see how she's going to do, because just even listening to her speaking about being out in the hills, and I know I've managed to get out for a few bigger days over the last few weeks, and there's just something really inspirational about it. And I'm sitting here at 4 o'clock on a Saturday afternoon and kind of not even caring about how bad the weather is, and just wanting to get out to the mountains. I don't know, I'm feeling quite pumped.
Yeah, it kind of rubs off, doesn't it? And from one Scottish sky runner, mountain runner, to another for next episode.
Yeah, absolutely. I've been lucky enough to dial in the local legend Robbie Simpson for the next episode, Sebby. So I'm really looking forward to getting him on, and we'll have a really good chat with him. He's got a lot to say about the mountain running world, a lot about racing, the experiences he's had, his mental approach to the sport, and really just shared his wealth of knowledge with us and all he's out there on all the things he's learned on his journey so far. And he's only 29 years old, so he's got a long way still to go, eh?
Yeah, I'm really looking forward to that one with Robbie, and really enjoyed today's episode, and I hope you all did too. As always, you can follow us on Instagram and Facebook at The Mountain Running Pod, and please subscribe to the podcast if you like and you enjoyed this episode. See you next time.